stories that we like to tell. It's like when getting up early in the morning with our dad, and we used to go out and meet up with our uncles and work in the fields.
He was always into the winemaking side, but just did homemade stuff. But everyone loved it.
As members of the family, presenting the wines ourselves, it's very important for us, and I think it's important for people as well to put a face on the wine.
I was born and raised here. I love the family history. I love the seasons. So somewhere deep down, I knew I was coming back.
It evolved. It started with wanting to grow grapes.
We say, so drink the wine. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 377. This week we feature Kerry Gott of Kerry Gott Vineyard and Winery Estates, Napa Valley. Spending time with Kerry Gott is like taking a tour through the Napa Valley wine business. Gott has seen many sides of winemaking and these days enjoys educating new winemakers. With 50 vintages behind him, he shows no sign of slowing down. The Gott family is known for great wine, and in fact, we interviewed Kerry's son, Joel Gott, way back in September of 2012 for podcast number 71. We met up with Kerry at his St. Helena office on the main street in a town grown from winemaking. You can also hear Kerry on our Vino Lingo segment, defining the terms private reserve and special selection. I'm here with Kerry Gott of Vineyard and Winery Estates here right in downtown St. Helena, and I'm sure that's going to be a very familiar name to a lot of our listeners. How are you doing, Kerry?
Very good, and you?
Beautiful day, man. I'm so happy you gave me this weather.
Yeah, no, it's really nice. It's just now we need rain.
Yeah. Well, I can't help you there. Sorry. If you need snow, I got plenty of that.
Okay.
Interesting business. Most of the people we talk to are winemakers, and obviously you've been down that path in your past, as well as vineyard owners, that sort of thing. Tell me about the business you're currently running right now.
Well, I'm a wine industry consultant and winemaker. I actually make wine for 4 different wineries right now. I've been at 4 wineries already today, writing work orders and getting the staff to do what do I need to have them do. So I help people get into the wine business. So here in Napa Valley, there's probably 25 to 30 different brands and wineries that I've started. Every brand doesn't necessarily have a winery, but I've helped a lot of people over the years get into the wine business. So that's what I currently do. But I am 4th generation in the California wine and grape business. And I started my first winery up in Amador County, Montevina, in the basement of our house in 1973. And made wine up there for 13 years and just loved it. And then the family broke the business up. And after that, I started Corbett Canyon Vineyards down in San Luis Obispo. That's in Edna Valley. And then after that, I spent about 15 years with Seagram running all of the Seagram wineries here in the state. So it was Sterling Vineyards, Mum Napa Valley, the Monterey Vineyard, and then I had some influence with projects we had going on in Chile and in Europe. And when I left Seagram in the late 90s, people asked me to start helping them get into the wine business, and that's what I've been doing. And a lot of these projects last 2 years to 5 years to 10 years, just depending on what is needed to make the project work. And currently there's 4 really fun projects that I'm doing right now with a really good cast of people.
What makes a really fun project for you?
Well, the people really listen to what you have to say, or what I have to say, so that I get them on the right path. You know, I help people get into business, not because I want them to get into the business. They want to get into the business. And so I steer them to the either right help, to the right comments, to the right thing, the right people to design the label, but maybe they don't like that designer and they want something else. But I try to steer them into a situation where they get a brand that they're really proud of.
So this is something that's going to have legs.
Yes, yeah. So it is to help them get into the business. I had originally studied architecture, although didn't graduate from USC. And one of the things that's really been fun in this project is the architects that I've get to work with on designing and altering the plans so that the winery works. Because When I had Montevigna up in Amador County and then again at Corbett Canyon Vineyards, I spent a lot of time in the cellar pulling hoses and, you know, being a cellar guy. And so I understand how wineries work. And so it's when you design a new winery, I'm thinking about, you know, you got to pull a hose around the corner, or I need this the sink over here, or all the drain in the floor there. I need power over there. So all the things that make it work from a wine production point of view.
So you're really, I hate the cliche, but it's, you've been there, you've done that.
Right. And this last year was my 50th harvest.
Wow, congratulations.
Yes, I started when I was two.
Yeah. I didn't want to say that, but, well, you know, some of the things we do, we earn those badges all kinds of different ways, right?
Yeah.
Actually, just curious for a side question, do you make your own wine yourself at
all? No, I experienced that all when I had Montevigna up in Amador County. And, you know, not that I have never thought about doing it again, but once I got into the world of helping larger companies steer their organizations into the right thing in the wine business, I spent 25 years really enjoying in the corporate world of getting the vineyards planted, writing the business plans to expand growth, getting new label designs, putting crews together to get the work done. So it's vineyards and wineries. And then I spent a lot of time on the road helping the sales and marketing people sell wine.
So you're really there to observe as well as to give them tips about how to do this right.
Right. And then in the past, although I haven't done it for a couple years, I've taught at University of California, Davis, in the extension, and I did that for probably 30 years of teaching people at the time of in a classroom setting about getting into the business and, you know, do this, don't do that, do this, don't do that. And then the stories of things that I've done in the wine business that really had been very enjoyable. And then I was able to help my son Joel get into the wine business.
And again, for our listeners, we interviewed Joel. Geez, it was in Chicago, I don't know, probably 6, 7, 8 years ago. Joel's a great guy, a lot of fun to talk to. And obviously, he's been quite successful.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a wine that's very visible, as yes. well as other areas of things that he's gotten into. So I think he's learned a lot from you.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, no, that's great. With these wineries that you're working with, obviously your company is visible to the people within the industry, but for you to the general public, are you more in behind the curtain a bit?
Oh, I'm behind the curtain. I mean, a lot of the brands that people want me to help them with, I don't want them to point at me. The brand doesn't equal me. The brand equals the person or the family or the son or daughter that's going to take over. And they're the ones that I want to help get into the business. I've done mine and I know how to do it, and I want to help people become shining stars in the wine business and have them enjoy it, because it's much more believable than you have your consultant who's helping set it up than having a family member that's proud of the brand that they've created.
Sure. Can anybody come to you?
Sure.
Really? That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm easy to find. You know, it's carry@carrygott.com.
Right here in St. Helena, across from the pharmacy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Very well-known spot in town. So all this years you've been in the business, 50 vintages is incredibly impressive. This could go positive or negative, but what makes you crazy about the wine business?
Oh, it's probably the most fun of it is that it's one big cycle every year. So here we are in the middle of February, and it's, even though it's nice and warm outside, the vines are all dormant and we're pruning the grapevines. We're putting together blends right now in the winery. We're racking the new wines. We're blending the 2018 reds. We're getting ready to bottle the 2019 whites over the next 4 or 5 months. We're watching the wines grow, such as I did a Cabernet tasting today of some 2018 Sonoma Cabernet from one of my clients, Brie Couleur. And I've known that the wine was going to pop at some point. The last time I tasted it just after harvest, it was hiding behind its shell. Tasted it this morning out of barrel, and here it comes. It's just great to see. And then this time of year, you get to watch the whites turn into interesting wines. We're still stirring the lees and the whites. In Pinot Noir, I love making Pinot Noir. And Pinot Noir is now starting to become really show its style. So we're doing a beauty contest for one of my brands, and I can tell it about it later. But it's interesting watching these wines that that we're making come alive. And then we spend a good amount of time in the spring and early summer bottling. And then everybody tries to escape in July or early August and get some vacation time in. And then boom, here comes harvest. And what's interesting about harvest is that the smells, the equipment, all the things that are part of harvest all appear again. So like when you smell your first fermentation, or you taste your first grape juice, or see your first Sauvignon Blanc juice that tastes great, or the smell of something in the cellar. So the cycle goes along, and then you watch it slowly slow down, and here comes the rain, and winter starts to close in, and you get the last of the grapes in, dig out the last fermenter, and boom, it's Thanksgiving. Whew, take a rest. And then December, we start over again, and here we go. So it's a very interesting cycle that you see around the world, and it is probably the real thing that I enjoy most about the business is educating the people at wineries that have never done it before. So wineries here in Napa Valley and Sonoma, we use a lot of interns during harvest. And sometimes they have never picked up a hose, they've never picked up a stainless steel fitting, they've never filled a barrel, they've never done anything. And you get to guide them into doing it correctly and watching them understand. So you get interns standing outside or next to a fermenter, and we're tasting some fermenting Cabernet or Pinot Noir or Chardonnay, and talking to them what I see, what I think, and asking them, what does it taste like to you? And so I get to train a lot of people that have never been around wine before. And then you get to put together a crew of people at each of the wineries that gets excited about making the wine.
What I'm liking talking to you is this smile on your face. After 50 vintages, you still have it. You love this, clearly.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's fun. And, you know, I've the four wineries I've walked into today, I've got great crews in all of them, and they're all substantially different.
And what are the names of those wineries you're working with?
So the oldest of them is Davis Estates, which is a beautiful winery just up the road here between St. Lena and Calistoga. And I met Mike Davis on a cold call to his business, computer business, down in Southern California. Knew nothing about the wine business, but had just bought a piece of property literally 2 miles away from my house. I knew the property quite well, and he had just bought it, and there was an article in the local newspaper that said, lifestyle buyers return to wine country. And so this was 2011, and there was not a lot of excitement going on in the wine business. We were recovering from the lousy times of 2008, 2009, and 2010. And got to help him put the whole thing together, introduce him to Howard Backen and Backen Gillam Architects, and helped him put together the whole winery and design it, you know, do this, don't do that, and work with Howard and company, which I had just finished another winery, Ramsgate, down in Carneros, that I put together for the people that were the investors in Ramsgate. And so it was putting it together. I am the winemaker, and you know, I just love it. It's an absolutely gorgeous winery, and I have a crew in there right now that likes it, to keep it as clean and neat and perfect as it was designed to be. So that's Davis Estates. Then I have Lauer Estates, L-A-W-E-R. We make our wine down at Laird. We are getting ready to build a Backen Gillam winery in Sonoma County. We just opened up a tasting room in downtown Calistoga and getting ready to build a beautiful Backen Gillam design, Lauer Wine, Art, and Event Center on beautiful Main Street in Calistoga. And again, it's just gorgeous. And she is a banker in Alaska. Doesn't come down here during the summer, but she's down here frequently in the winter when it's cold enough. She doesn't like the heat, but she's really fun. In fact, today, I just got off the phone with her a couple minutes ago. She has some apple trees on her property on Franz Valley School Road, which is in Sonoma County. And she's always wanted to make cider. And so today, at another winery, I know the people that have a brand, it's called Horse and Plow, and they make cider. I've never made cider. and they're going to teach me how to make cider, and we're going to be making cider from her apples this coming harvest at the winery, which we would call Custom Crush. And that cider will then go to her new tasting room in downtown Calistoga. I love that kind of stuff. And it's easy to talk to them. It's like, look, I don't know anything about making cider. I've probably had a total of a dozen bottles in my life, but it's something new that I can put together for one of my clients.
And just to be clear, I'm assuming it's hard cider.
Yes, yeah.
Just want to make sure, rather than just your garden variety every day.
No. It won't be Martinelli's, although I like Martinelli's. Yeah. Then there is Bricoleur, Bricoleur, which in terminology means handyman in French. They have their own saying about what Bricoleur means, and basically it means that we're doing everything in bits and pieces, we're having a great time, but basically we're doing everything by the seat of our pants. We make those wines at Punchdown Cellars in Santa Rosa. We have about 60 acres of vineyard in Fountain Grove District and Russian River, and we're making Pinot Noir, Cabernet, Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Grenache Rosé, which you see there is flying by the seat of our pants. Beautiful packaging, great people, and we're getting ready to build a winery for them, and they're just finishing their new hospitality barn, quite a large operation, and this is just outside of Windsor. So there's another winery coming that we get to put together. And then for two investors from Hong Kong, I put together a winery called Calla-Lily out in Pope Valley, which is just over the hill here, but it still is the Appalachian Napa County. And one of the investors' wife's name translates as Calla-Lily. Mm. So we have a vineyard, about a 20-acre vineyard, and all the varieties in the vineyard actually make a Bordeaux varietal wine that we can label as Cabernet. So with an assistant winemaker that I work with there on a couple of my projects, we take the best and we blend two different wines, Ultimate Cabernet Sauvignon and then Audax, which you see the package there. Yeah. Audax, and so that's just, there's just four of the projects, and you know, I can go down the street here in St. Helene or up towards Calistoga and probably find another dozen or more that have either helped put the winery together, have made the wine, or have been guidance to the owners.
You've had a good life.
Yeah, I know, it's great.
Yeah, I just love the smile on your face. I mean, you know, some people, even those who love their jobs, 50 vintages is a lot, and it doesn't sound like you have any plans of retiring, from what I can see.
No. Why?
For you. Yeah, why would you?
Yeah, and I grow grapes, too.
Yeah, well, even more importantly.
Yeah.
Do you grow them right here in...
They grow them around my house, and I sell the grapes to Davis Estates.
Cool.
And we just sort of... I do a review of all the wines that we've made for the year, and I have to be careful that I don't overstate the quality of my grapes from my vineyard, which I gave 2.5 stars out of 5. Nobody got more than 4 stars for the year. So, you know, it's fun and fun to grow.
Well, you're a tough judge, I would think.
Yeah.
In all the years you've been making wine, is there one particular lesson or bit of wisdom that you could say you've carried with you consistently through all these vintages? One thing that is paramount.
Well, I think it really is just letting the vineyard speak. So the first vineyard that I had, and I had a very small amount of viticultural training at University of California, Davis, because I left USC in architecture and went to University of California, Davis. Well, at the time, my dad was running Inglenook here in Rutherford. And so my second year at Davis, or basically I was a senior, I kind of like, this is way too slow. I'm not going to get out. I want to get my hands into it. So not being a real educated cellar person, I worked at Inglenook for a year. And then I spent 3 years at Sterling Vineyards in the cellar. We moved up to Amador County and started Montevigna in the basement of our house, like I told you. And I had an old Italian, David P. Massoni, that taught me how to farm. And he was just a classic older gent. He had grown up and farmed this vineyard, you know, since he was a kid. He at one point, he actually farmed the vineyard with a horse and plow. So that goes way back. And he taught me how to farm, and really the understanding of the vineyards, and you get vineyard eyes and get a good vineyard taste for the grapes. And I created the winery and the wine brand, and I was very fortunate that we were able to do it as inside our family, and bought the barrels and bought the equipment and put it together. And it really goes to the respect of the grapes, because the wine's going to be no better than the grapes. And so I learned from the beginning, it's growing the grapes and understanding the vineyard and sort of like what you do want and what you don't want. So I think I would say really respecting the grapes is one of the most important thing. And I think most winemakers would say that the same thing, is that we're not going to make any wine any better than what the grapes are.
That's very true. So if you were to pass off a bit of wisdom, and I'm sure you do, that's basically what we're talking about. Is there one particular thing you would say to a new winemaker, to somebody who's, you know, pretty fresh?
Well, don't try to overdo it. We tend to, over the years, have made bigger and bigger wines. We make them differently than what we were originally trained at Davis. At Davis, when I was there as a kid, 23.5 degree bricks are about 24% sugar. University told us those grapes are ripe, get them off the vine and do it. Well, that's not really the case. The grapes could be ripe at 22, only for a few things do I actually, a few wines, rosé mainly, do I pick grapes at low sugar. But it really is understanding the flavor of the grapes and getting them off the vine at the right time. And the right time is an interesting situation, because it's not like you can say on Monday, pick the grapes on Tuesday. It doesn't work that way in the world. You got to give everybody a chance to sort of get all the equipment together, get the crew out into the vineyard, get them picked, get them into the winery, make sure you have tanks to go into. So it's a global look at the whole project that you're putting together. So it is really what I've over the years have tried to do is train people on how to be soft in action, but getting the work done so that everybody survives harvest. You get the grapes in. And now if you have, like in 2017, we had like 10 or 15 days in a row, it was over 100 degrees, you know? And so how do you handle that? The grape sugar just went straight up. And pretty soon the winery was full of, the tanks were full, the grapes were getting too high in sugar. And we really had to work very hard to get all the grapes in. And the following year, we had a much slower vintage, and we sort of were able to take our time. And just like when 2019 was a slow vintage. So what I've learned over the years is you just keep your, you know, the blinders wide open and watch the whole world that's going on. And you have years that you have new vineyards coming in. You have new people to work with. You have new interns, or in the case of one winery recently, some key people left. And so I'm now operating the winery with a staff that I pulled up from the ranks, and they're great. They're just, you know, and I'm running it as a team, because I don't know everything that there is in the wine business. I just know how it generally runs. And you get these people that are going to be down there closer to the grapes and the action and the pump switch and filling the barrels and making sure they're doing the job correctly, and they get some recognition for doing the job correctly. Well, one of the big things is that when harvest is usually over, you get a few bottles of Veuve Clicquot, a few bags of Cheetos, go to Gott's here in St. Helena, and we drink Veuve Clicquot and have Cheetos. And I can tell you, it is an award winner.
I believe that.
Because it's just kind of like, wow. Really good champagne and Cheetos. Could they possibly go together? They're stunning.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how certain things go together in that way? It's amazing.
And they're same color.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt either. Have you done sparkling yourself at all?
Oh, yeah. I used to run Mom Napa Valley. Yeah, that was one of the Seagram wineries here that I ran for probably 8 or 9 or 10 years. And now for a couple of my clients, Lauer and for Bricolor, we are working with Rack and Riddle over in Healdsburg, and buying entourage, or the wine is sitting on its side, bottles on its side, on the yeast, sparkling wine that we can adjust the flavors and colors and get it the way we want. So I'm still in the sparkling wine business.
Cool. Hey, you're just flying. This is great. Of all the times you've been interviewed and you talk about the business, what is the one question that you've not been asked that you would like to be asked? And who knows, maybe you've already been asked everything.
Oh, I don't know if that I've ever been asked, and I don't know that there is actually an answer. What's the best wine you've ever made? And I think that it is, well, in the case of, and it's actually there on the table, is to create something new for a client that really it's going to appear to be special. And that will be, what is it, vino word? What's your?
Vino lingo.
Vino lingo. Well, so I'll explain it to you when we get to vino lingo. But we created a special wine, and I got the owners and the owner's daughter and another person involved with making the wine special. And it was a beauty contest, a barrel by barrel beauty contest of Pinot Noir. And so we had like 40 barrels of Pinot Noir and five different clones, six different fermenters. So that we had all these various lots. And with Pinot Noir, the wine goes into barrel and then you never rack it. You leave it on the original fermentation lees that what goes into barrel after it's been pressed. And then we stir it and then the wine starts to come alive. And after about this time of year, in fact, we're actually gonna start it again next week for Brie Couleur. The selection of barrels, if the wines are getting there that they can start to really speak, and do another beauty contest of the barrels that we really like. Because you could have the same fermenter, same block of vineyard, but once you put it into barrel, whether it's 1 year new or brand new or has been used three times, all barrels go in slightly different direction. And then you get a group of people that are tasting together and we mark the barrels. And we kept for the Brie Couleur special selection, eight barrels of Pinot Noir, about 200 cases worth of wine. And the wine's stunning. And we're really excited about it. So that is, there's a wine that I think is really gonna be good. So up in Amador County when I was a kid, I planted 80 acres of new vines on top of the 80 acres of old vines that we had at Montemigna. And I tried, we already had Zinfandel, so there was Sauvignon Blanc, a little bit of Chardonnay, Nebbiolo, Cabernet, Merlot, didn't plant any Cabernet Franc. There might be one other variety in there. And started to make the varieties, and one of the varieties that I planted was Barbera. Amador County is particularly good growing area for Barbera, and had never been planted up there before. And the third or fourth vintage that we grew of Barbera there made absolutely a stunning wine. I don't have any more bottles of it because we drank it all. Probably the last bottle was probably 10 years ago. But it was just such an amazing wine that I remember it being stunning. So, you know, there are a lot of memories in the past. When I was at Monterey Vineyard and made all the wines there, 1 year we had a Pinot Blanc that in barrel was on lees, kind of went off on its own direction. And I really liked it, but the assistant winemaker that was working for me at the time thought, oh no, this isn't really good. We'd managed to win best of show, best of class, best wine at the whole, whatever the vintage was or year was, California State Fair. And it really helped make the Monterey Vineyard sort of come alive.
Sure. Well, it goes to show wine is subjective.
Yeah.
Do you have a particular vintage that for you is your favorite that stands out?
74 and 78 in Amador County. At Corbett Canyon Vineyards, it would have been the 85 vintage. At Sterling, I didn't make the wines, but Sterling, the 78 wines were extremely good. Because I didn't get to Sterling until later than that, in the early 90s. 96 in Napa Valley. And here, current wines of all of these, the 2018 vintage is stunning, and the 2014s are really starting to show well.
So you're working Napa Valley and Sonoma Valley.
Right.
Very different places, certainly in terms of climate, and in terms of soil. Do you find one to be more of a challenge than the other, or are they present equal challenges to you?
Well, the further you get to the coast in Sonoma, it gets cold. And the varieties that are planted there more so often than not is Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. And the colder it is, and the depending on the year and how much fog there is at flowering time, it can be really difficult for the vines to hang any kind of crop because they like to have some level of heat. And so a lot of growers over on the coast are trying to figure out ways to keep the vines warmer at that time of year, which you could imagine you've got acres of grapes out in the cold. How do you do it? Well, there's some techniques, I don't know them all, but those cold climate wines tend to be thinner and lighter, and so you have to adjust your winemaking to it. You get into the Russian River Valley where it's warmer, and then you get to Dry Creek and it's warmer, and you get to the Alexander Valley and it's warmer, or way up in Mendocino County in Anderson Valley, again, cold again. So the varieties switch through or change through the various areas depending on the weather. Now here, Carneros to the south is cool and can be pretty windy, but not as cold as the Sonoma coast. But that is good, interestingly enough, for Merlot, really good for Pinot Noir and really good for Chardonnay, and surprisingly enough for Cabernet Franc. Then you start traveling north in the avenues in Napa, Coombsville area, and then you get north of Napa, we warm up all the way up to Calistoga where it's quite warm. So it is the varieties change as you go up the valley. You know, it doesn't mean that you can't find somebody who's planted Cabernet down in Carneros, but probably guaranteed it's not going to be a stunning wine.
Yeah. Has there been a variety, though, that you've tried to take on that has been, that you lost the battle to or just was so complex?
Cabernet can be in that mode in that it does like hillsides, but you can't make it too steep, light crop. So Cabernet really is finding the right soil and location for it. Chardonnay can be interesting. You know, if the climate is too warm for Chardonnay, you just don't make interesting wine. Yeah. I wouldn't buy grapes from a Chardonnay vineyard up in Calistoga, if there was such a thing. I'm sure there is. It's just too warm because you want the grapes to be on the vine long enough that they get mature. They just don't get sugar ripe. They get mature because it's an early variety. The variety that I've enjoyed more since I've been making more and more Pinot Noir recently is actually Pinot Noir. So as a kid, it was Zinfandel and Sauvignon Blanc in Amador County, those two mainly. And then San Luis Obispo was Chardonnay, a lot of Chardonnay when Corbett Canyon Vineyard. Not too many reds and only a small amount of Pinot Noir. I didn't get to work with much Pinot Noir down there. And then once I got to the Monterey Vineyard, it was a lot of heavy crop Zinfandel to make white Zinfandel. Not exactly the most exciting wine to make, but I made a lot of white Zinfandel at Montevigna also. And so we were a very commercial brand. And then once I got up here, it was all of the Pinot Noir and Chardonnay from Mum. And then Sterling was Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, a lot of Sauvignon Blanc and Chardonnay, and a lot of hillside vineyards. And I got to replant hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of acres of vineyard due to phylloxera.
Hey, boy, that's no fun whatsoever. Just a replanting alone to me from a business point of view is like, whoa, it's crazy.
No, you know, it's a fun business. One of the things that we do see is climate change.
Right.
It is a huge thing. In Amador County, as a kid, we didn't pick Sauvignon Blanc, which I grew, until guaranteed the start of the third week in September. Most of the Sauvignon Blanc is off the vine by the end of August now. We used to have a lot of frost here in Napa Valley. Very rare that we get a frost in the spring, which is good from a grower's point of view.
Sure, sure.
The first year I was here in Napa Valley, we had 22 continuous days of frost, and the last day was the worst. That would be 1971. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
And we barely get frost here now. Now watch, this year will be a disaster. Yeah.
No, we don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, but there's a big climate change. It's just definitely warmer. And of course, the storyline is, you know, is what's going to happen to Napa Valley Cabernet? What's going to happen to, you know, the wine business has its huge cycles. I've seen many cycles in the business. When we first came, my wife and I first came here to Napa Valley, there was probably only a dozen and a half prominent wineries. And now there's just hundreds of wineries and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of brands.
It's changed. Yeah. It's a constantly evolving place.
Yeah.
And hopefully it won't evolve too much.
Right.
Yeah. Now, you don't have a tasting room here. Obviously, these are your offices here. But do you just send along people who say, hey, you know, Carrie, where do you suggest I go? I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah. I send people to Davis Estates. We have the new Lauer tasting room. We have the beautiful new Brie-Couleur hospitality barn, which is going to be right next to the big new winery that we're getting ready to build. That's over in Windsor. Calla Lily, we don't really do tastings there, although if you call ahead of time, we'll put on a tasting.
Nice. For our listeners who want to learn about you online, what is your website?
Carrygott.com. CARYGOTT.com.
Very easy to learn. And again, a name incredibly well known here in Napa Valley. Carrie, thank you for taking the time this afternoon.
Good. Lots of fun.
Yeah, very much. Learn more by visiting Carrygott.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Copyright 2020.